This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Wednesday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio as we get ready for the divisional rounds. Coming up, we're going to talk about legacy. And the reason I bring it up is because of what we talked to Rachel Hotmire about yesterday from ABC 26 in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers is once again pursuing another Super Bowl championship. And look, I mean, there's a whole bunch of quarterbacks in the history of the Super Bowl that have only gotten one. And for a lot of quarterbacks, one is enough. You know, Trent Dilfer didn't need two, right? Brad Johnson doesn't need two. But there are other quarterbacks that we are looking at and looked at and said, boy, there's something about getting that second one would be important to your legacy. Now, we're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers because, once again, he's got a football team in the Green Bay Packers that are the, you know, one of the favorites to go to the Super Bowl, one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl. But remember, he has not been there in 11 years since Super Bowl 45 when they won against the Pittsburgh Steelers at AT&T Stadium. Since going to that Super Bowl, he is 0-4 in NFC Championship games. He's got a divisional matchup coming up this weekend against the San Francisco 49ers team that, even though I can see all the angles people are making when they make this claim, I can see where they're going. I still think Green Bay is going to win. But there are things that San Francisco does that could be problematic for the Packers. And the way they run the football and the way they're physical up front. And again, the offensive line for the Packers has not been their strongest case. If Aaron Rodgers fails to get to the Super Bowl this year, especially this year, given all of the offseason turmoil and the conversation about trading him and getting rid of him and having to have him move on and he wanting to move on and all of those things that we discussed over the summer, what would it mean to his legacy? We're going to talk about that coming up. We're also going to get more into these teams and sort of in-depth look into these teams because I am still buzzing about what the Rams did Monday night against Arizona. And maybe the Rams could be a sleeper pick in the NFC. Hard to say a sleeper pick given their season and how good they played this year, but they do have to go on the road to Tampa Bay. We'll talk about Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers and how important is it for him to get that second Super Bowl ring. That's all coming up. Wake Up Call continues on Wednesday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. We're going to get more into these four games coming up this weekend. The eight teams are all vying for a spot in Super Bowl 56. I did want to start this hour by talking about the Green Bay Packers, because yesterday Rachel Hotmire joined us from ABC 26. We got in a little talking about Rodgers towards the end of that interview. We said in one of the points I made and that she kind of elaborated on was, you know, the Green Bay Packers once again, and this is like a record that just keeps repeating, comes into this postseason, great record, number one seed. They've always had good teams. You know, sometimes they've had sort of a team that may be flawed in one or two ways, but most teams are when they get to the postseason. No one is a perfectly balanced football team. But when you have Aaron Rodgers, there's an expectation that, you know, you got a better chance of going to the Super Bowl than other teams. And yet they've only gone to one, and they haven't gone to one in 11 years. Again, go to Super Bowl 45 when they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it gets me thinking about this. And this is more of sort of a history level. Maybe it's something Aaron Rodgers doesn't care about. Maybe he does. I don't know. Some players are into their legacy, and some players couldn't care less about their legacy. And I'm not talking about Hall of Fame. Aaron Rodgers is going to the Hall of Fame. That's fine. But the way we judge quarterbacks a lot is by championships. And we don't necessarily mean you have to have the most. We kind of do that a little too much, let's say, in the NBA, where we evaluate really great players by, hey, did you have six rings like Michael Jordan? Like, we don't do that necessarily. Nobody's going to catch Tom Brady. But there does seem to be a consensus, you know, without any formal declaration, there does seem to be a consensus that we like our star quarterbacks to have more than one, right? And this is one of the reasons it always bothered me about Drew Brees. I always wish Drew Brees could get another one. You know, I think Drew Brees is obviously one of the greatest quarterbacks to play, but he only has one Super Bowl and one appearance. I wish he would have gotten more, because we do that. We do have a tendency to say, gee, you know, oh man, all that talent and all those good football teams, and yet they managed to win only one Super Bowl. And that's where Aaron Rodgers is right now. Not the Packers organization, obviously, but that's where Aaron Rodgers is. He has the same amount of Super Bowl wins as Brad Johnson, as Trent Dilfer, right? As guys who have won a Super Bowl, and really that was it. That was their moment in the sun. And Rodgers is obviously a better quarterback than that. He's one of the greatest all time. And I don't know if Rodgers thinks about that kind of thing, or if he's cognizant of the fact that that is absolutely how people outside of the players and coaches view the success rate of great quarterbacks, is how many Super Bowls you put up. You don't need to do three. We don't need to do four. I mean, after two, it sort of gets, it's almost like extra bonus time. But we do want you to have that second. Look, I'll go to my grave believing that Peyton Manning wanted a second Super Bowl. Not because he wants a Super Bowl every year, like that old cliche, you know, I play to win it all every time. I think he knew that getting that second one was important. He needed that second one. And a lot of it because his brother had to, but I think he also understood that he would have had a Hall of Fame, you know, a career that people would point to as one of the greatest ever, but always shine light on the fact that he had one championship to show for it. And Rodgers is on that trajectory. I would really hope, I mean, I really do hope that he gets another one, so that sort of erases that sort of conversation. But since his Super Bowl victory against the Pittsburgh Steelers, he has gone to four NFC Championships games, and he's lost them all. Now, this weekend, he's got a divisional matchup against San Francisco. He's got to get by the 49ers to get another crack at a championship game. But in 2014, these are the seasons, that they were played in. 2014, they lost at Seattle. 2016, they lost at Atlanta. 2019, they lost at San Francisco. And in 2020, they lost to Tampa Bay. Right? So it's, again, sort of this level of disappointment. Right? It's like, I don't want to say, when you get to the Super Bowl, I think it's a different way we look at you. But after a while, when you keep knocking at the door and knocking at the door, you want, there's some sort of feeling like, well, is there a pressure to knock it down one more time? The one Super Bowl is just not enough for one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. It just isn't. I know it should be, right? But it just isn't. And I think for Aaron Rodgers, again, if he cares about this at all, and he might not, I do think that he wants to win a Super Bowl to win a Super Bowl, of course. But I do think there is that one where you say, I got the second one. I got the second one. And it goes back to something that we buzzed about so much during the offseason, because it was the number one story that we processed, which was the future of Aaron Rodgers in a Green Bay Packers uniform. What was it going to be? Right? He wanted out. He was unhappy. But then they did things to try to make him happy. And now you have this marriage coming together again, where Rodgers once again has the Packers in prime position to go to a Super Bowl. His best chances of going to a Super Bowl are with this organization, right? Look, if he walked away and went to Denver, would Denver be a Super Bowl favorite? Yeah, you could say it, because they've got a good quarterback and they've got a good defense. But we don't know who the head coach is going to be there, right? If he went to Pittsburgh, would the Steelers become a Super Bowl favorite? Not likely, because there's a lot of things the Steelers need to fix. The Packers are the best place for him to get this, if indeed that's what he wants to do. I've said all along this summer, I found it difficult to think of Aaron Rodgers in the same process of trying to play anywhere else, right? I couldn't wrap my head around it, because I thought to myself, If you want to play somewhere else just to prove a point, go ahead. But if you want to play somewhere else thinking it gives you the best chance to win a Super Bowl, that's not true. That's not true. This organization with Aaron Rodgers has put him in position to win Super Bowls, to go to Super Bowls. They just haven't been able to get over the hump of the playoffs. He's 11-9 in the postseason since going to that Super Bowl. All time in his career. Now, listen, I think those records are misleading, and I've said this over and over again. I think those records are misleading because you can only lose once in the playoffs in any given year. It means that 11-9 means that 9 times he has gotten his team to the postseason and 9 times he has failed to get to the championship. That it's somewhere along the line he has lost. All right, what that record actually does tell you, though, is that he's about a little over 500 when it comes to the playoffs. That he doesn't get deep. I've always said, like, in tennis, I always hated the stat when people would give me a tennis record. And they would say, like, he's 28-10 in 11 appearances at Wimbledon. And I'd be like, well, okay, that means he's won Wimbledon once, and this record is meaningless. I always thought that tennis, for example, should have a tournament, like a tournament game, like a stat that shows me how many wins they get in any given year. Like, every time he gets to Wimbledon, he wins 3.7 matches. Like, that would be a better statistic than win-loss when you can only lose once in a given round, you know, a tournament where, you know, it's you are eliminated, single elimination. Rodgers is just a few games over 500. Now, he may not need to play as many because he may not go to the wild card round enough. We saw this with, like, Tom Brady, for example. But it also shows that 11-9, he's not getting to the Super Bowl. He's not piling up more wins to get to the Super Bowl. And I do think there is a legacy here that I am wondering how we'll view Aaron Rodgers. Everything that he has done in his career puts him in the upper echelon, the upper echelon of quarterbacks who have played this game. He has played it so well and so remarkably well. He's going down as one of the greatest to do it. But there's going to be a caveat to his career if he doesn't get that second Super Bowl. I don't know why two matters. To be honest with you, it really shouldn't, but it just does. I think it's because there are so many quarterbacks that have won one, some that aren't considered the greatest of all time. And I think Aaron Rodgers is, and I think it is important that he gets at least two. And I think the best place for him to get it is with the Green Bay Packers. All right, we'll talk more about the postseason. As I said at the top of the hour, I'm still buzzing a bit about how the Los Angeles Rams beat Arizona. And how ready will they be for Tom Brady and the Buccaneers down in Tampa? We'll talk about that next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio on a Wednesday. Just a few days out from the divisional Saturday. Now, as you know, I live in Nashville, and we're all buzzing about the Titans. Can't wait. 12th man. I think Jarrell Casey is going to be the 12th man this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. That's a big deal. They come out in the field. They got the sword. They make a big show of it. Get the crowd all fired up.
Do they get to bang a drum?
I think they do. I don't go to a lot of Titans games, so I'm not sure of the preseason festivities that are going on. But yeah, well, they expect a loud crowd. I'm like, hey, more the better. You're going to need it. Cincinnati.
And mostly Titans fans?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping, right? I mean, listen, I know, Cincinnati is not that far from Nashville. So you can, you know, if you're a Bengals fan, it's not that bad of a drive to boogie on down, like get on 65 and drive straight down to the city and root for your football team.
Why not?
Especially as exciting as Joe Burrow is. But, man, I'm liking this Rams-Buccaneers game, man. I really am.
I think that one's going to be the best one of the weekend.
I really am. Listen, we commented a lot yesterday on Arizona and just being, you know, kind of not
deer
being
in headlights.
Ready for the moment, deer in headlights, and just being completely unprepared.
Yeah, every one of those analogies fits.
Right, exactly. But I think lost in the shuffle was the Rams, man. They opened up the playbook a bit. Stafford was very good. He didn't need to be awesome, but he didn't turn the ball over either. Cam Akers in just his second game back from injury, he had a good game. I think that there is something about this Rams team that I would be very concerned about if I was Tampa Bay. Now, Tampa Bay had an easy time with Philadelphia. That's no problem. But this Rams team is really good. And I'm a little, I mean, look, I think there is something to the fact that Matt Stafford getting his first playoff win could open up a little bit of not the floodgates. It's sort of too cliche, but you know what I mean? Where you finally get it done and then you get that out of the way and then you start winning more, right? Now, he said something interesting at the end of the game Monday night where they asked him about getting his first playoff win, and he says, well, I think you guys tend to care about that more. I don't think people care about that more. I think they want to ask you about it. I don't think the media cares whether you win a playoff game or not. But it is something that is a story. And if you don't think it's a story, then the story becomes you not thinking it's a story. I don't think the media was rooting for Matt Stafford to get a playoff win. I think the media wanted to know what he thought about getting his first playoff win. And if he thinks nothing, then that's the story. If he thinks, hey, I finally was able to do it after leading the Lions to a couple of postseason berths and not being able to do it, and now I get to go to Los Angeles and I do get to do it, well, then that's a story. That's what they were looking for. I find it difficult, and I'm going to tell you right now, I find it difficult to think that Stafford, somewhere in the back of his mind, isn't saying, oh, that was great. Oh, thank God. I've experienced losses. I've walked off this field with my season over in the postseason, and this is a great feeling to walk off with a win. I don't know why athletes aren't honest. I think they're so nervous about saying something that sounds a little selfish that they're so guarded, and then they act like none of it matters at all, right? Like, hey, Matt, you had a lot of struggles in the postseason the last couple of years. What's it feel like to get your first postseason win? I don't think about that at all. I'm just glad we won as a team. I'm glad I was able to contribute to the team, winning as a team. You know, this team is good, and this team is going to go far. And we're trying to go far, try to win a Super Bowl. It's the goal here. It's a goal here since I got here as a team, because as a team, we won a championship. That's a team thing. It's almost like you're a little nervous to make it about yourself for just like 2 seconds. When maybe I would be media trained if I was an athlete to say those things, but when the honest answer might be like, yeah, I'm really glad I won. It's hard when you walk off the field and you don't win. It's difficult. Yeah, and I really wanted to win in Detroit. I really tried. We had teams that were capable of winning, and there were things I didn't do right. And there's nothing worse than walking off a playoff field with a loss and knowing your season's over and that you kind of disappointed some people along the way. It feels great to get this one and to get a win, and it's a great feeling. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, do you? I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that.
No.
Well, I mean, like, are players just, like, nervous at the backlash would be, oh, he only cares about himself.
I think what it is, players are just nervous about saying anything anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's why if you have a current player on the team in an interview, it's very rare that you have someone like an Aaron Rodgers who just doesn't care anymore. But Aaron Rodgers, if Aaron Rodgers was doing an interview, say, in his second year, third year, he's going to be very guarded about everything he says.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think he now, you know, he has a known personality trait. He has, you know, the clout of saying, you know, I'm Aaron bleeping Rodgers. I can do what I want. I can say what I want because, you know, look what I've accomplished. You get new athletes, younger athletes, I think they're almost afraid of their shadow.
But again, I know these guys, there is a communications department within every team that sort of gets these guys and say, hey, look, here are the best ways to answer this. So they're pretty vanilla. I understand it. You get a little media training. But in the end, we're all human, right? And not everybody buys into the it doesn't matter narrative, right? Like, it's something that you say, but you may not believe, right? And I think we're all you know, we all want to showcase a little success sometimes. I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons we have social media blows up. It's one of the reasons, and I found the growth of social media incredible with the older generation, right? Like my parents and my parents, the people in my, I see them more on a platform that they once said I would never do. And then once they got a bite of the apple was very, very delicious. Even if you're 60, 65, 70 years old, right? It's just addicting. And I don't think athletes are necessarily immune to that because they're athletes. I think they do want to share some of their personal successes. They're just a little afraid because the narrative has always been, no, the only thing that matters is winning. Like a baseball player. Hey, you hit for the cycle. Isn't that awesome? Or you hit 3 home runs. And the first thing they say is, we lost the game. It doesn't matter. Well, you know what? It does matter. Like if you hit for the cycle or you hit 3 home runs in a game, of course you want to win. But your accomplishment isn't null and void because you didn't win a baseball game, one of 162. Right? And likewise for Matt Stafford, even on a larger level. To say, I never cared about any of that. Why wouldn't you care about any of that? Like, it didn't bother you that you lost all those playoff games in Detroit? It didn't bother you that you were like, every time I go to the playoffs, I don't walk off the field a winner, and now I just did? It's just another day at the office? It's not another day at the office. Right? I know I told you this story, but I'll repeat it again just to prove a point. I remember when I was in Denver and I was covering the Broncos, and Rod Smith was he needed like 5 catches or something like that to set the Broncos single season or career reception record. It was career reception record or something. It was some record that he was going to have, and so he gets it, and they bring him in at the end of the game. Normally he doesn't speak at the podium, but because he had set the record, he came in and spoke at the podium, and everyone was asking him about it, and he went, now, it's just another game. It's just another game to me. And you know, it's all that matters is we won. It's the only thing I care about. I don't care about stats. That's a you guys thing. And he was doing the yeah, same stuff over and over again. Same stuff every athlete does. You guys care about that. I never think about that. And then one of the reporters said, we noticed that your like extended family was here today. Is there a reason for that? Like people flew in for this game. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, they came to just come to a game. Like it didn't match up. His explanation that he didn't even think about that record. That record didn't matter to him. That it's just about winning, and you guys only care about those kind of things. And then somebody pointed out, no, you flew relatives into this game. Like, you flew your family members into for this particular game on the calendar. Like, you didn't do it in week 3 week 6.
Is it only okay for an athlete to do that if we stop the game? Like, when Drew Brees broke, the passing yards record?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a Monday night, and everyone stopped what they were doing, and he kind of, you know, tipped his hat to the crowd. You know, he had a moment. So in that case, it's all right for him to say, yeah, you know, I'm pretty cool. I got the record.
Right.
You know, if it's anything else other than that, it's like, ah, no. You know,
no, I know.
It was a team effort.
And I'm not bringing this up to shame Rod Smith. I think he's a great guy. He is a great guy. But he tried to do the thing that he was trained to do, when in reality, that wasn't really the truth. When the truth was, he cared. He did care. It was a big deal. He was undrafted, and he's now, at that particular moment, the Broncos' all-time receiving leader, right? Of all the players that played under Elway, the Three Amigos, all of that, he was the all-time receiving leader. It's okay to say, personally, this mattered to me. It mattered to me. Like, in Stafford's comment on Monday, all right, they're fine, they're cliche, and we got to take him at his word that maybe it didn't matter at all that his first play. But I got to think when he got home to his wife, Kelly, he was like, you know what? That felt great. That felt great. I walked off so many fields in the playoffs losing, and that was awesome. That was a good feeling. All right, more playoff talk as we continue. It's on a Wednesday on Wake Up Call. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Got Pat Donovan coming up during the show today. And Alex Gold will also join us, one of our good friends. We'll talk Kansas City Chiefs. So the Bucks and Chiefs are on the clock for this show this morning. I just saw on Twitter that today is the 20th anniversary of the Tuck Rule game at Brady and the Raiders at Foxborough. 20 years? Good God. I was so confused. I remember watching that game being so lost. I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. The Tuck Rule. I think 20 years later, I still get confused.
I still. I remember, I was at a Chuck E. Cheese watching that game.
You were at a Chuck E. Cheese watching that game?
I was at a Chuck E. Cheese because I had coached a soccer team. We decided to have our team party that night. That was just what was convenient for everybody. And I was like, right. Parents were all like, let's do it at Chuck E. Cheese. And I'm looking at the calendar going,
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, it'll be fine. And I was like, you know what? They got TVs there. And, gave, the coach a speech, like, hey, good job. Here's your trophy. Back to the game. But the thing that was terrible is that, they don't have the volume on.
Yeah.
Because Chucky's got to perform on stage and stuff like that. So, for me, I could not wait to get home to go, what happened?
What was that all about? Yeah. That was crazy.
I mean, the cool thing was you're in Southern California where, it's a balmy 60-some-odd degrees, and you're looking at this field just covered in snow going, oh, that'd be awesome.
I was my wife and I were living in South Florida, and I was trying – at the time, we moved there because I was part of this when I worked in minor league basketball, we had a franchise in Tampa that I worked with, and there was going to be a franchise in West Palm Beach. So I went down there to work with the owner and the general manager on putting that team on the map, securing a venue and working all that. But it fell through, and I ended up working. I was working in at an insurance company, and I was kind of a claims person and whatnot. And I was completely out of the sports business. So when I was watching the games, I had no avenue of reporting. I have no show or anything like that. I had nothing. I was working at this insurance company, and I really thought my broadcasting career was over because they offered me a full-time job, and I was very close to taking it because I had a little boy. And then a couple of days after this game, an old program director that I worked with in Las Vegas got through to me and said, hey, I need somebody in Denver. Would you like to come to Denver in a couple months? And I was, so this game is always kind of that, this game. And then the following AFC championship game of the Steelers was like a kind of a feel good, like a time where I look back with kind of joy, because I remember being like, I don't really want to work in insurance. It's not what I trained to do. It's a good job. It was a really good job. Nice office, beautiful. It was right near the water and everything, South Florida. But I really wanted to get back into this business. So every time I think about that game and the Steelers' success, I always kind of go back to that time when I had a little boy that I almost left the business for. But I still, to this day, think it is one of the more remarkable moments because of what it led to. Now, look, I know that the history of Tom Brady would have still have been written by the Patriots had the referees had come out and said, nope, that's a fumble, Raiders have the ball, game over, the game would have been over because the Raiders would have ran out of the clock. Instead, the Patriots kick a field goal, they go into overtime, and they win the game. I still think that there was so much that Bill Belichick liked about Brady over Drew Bledsoe that they would have made the change. But you never know, right? I mean, you never know that Bledsoe had the contract. You never know. I mean, once you win a Super Bowl, that sort of solidifies you as now the quarterback of the franchise. But who knows? But there was so much to like. I think the Patriots would have still written the Brady question, the Brady legacy. But imagine if they had. Imagine if the Raiders had recovered that ball and that Tuck Rule was not in place. And whatever it was that people, thought the Tuck, that rule. Because Belichick knew the rule. That's one of the reasons that he knew what the rule was. But if the referees had said, nope, we don't see it that way, and it's Raider ball, I wonder what kind of legacy the Patriots would have. How long would it have taken for Brady and that team to win a Super Bowl?
right? I mean, it's easy to say, oh, no, they would have won. They would have continued. But you never know, right? They didn't win the next year. Like, they won the Super Bowl but didn't make the playoffs the right after that. Then they won two in a row. Who knows? It might have changed the fortunes of a few players who wouldn't have gone to New England. Maybe go somewhere else. Who knows? But, yeah, 20 years ago, I think that's when – I mean, look, Patriot fans are always going to remember the run to the postseason. But I think for most people nationally, when they think the first time they were really – remember Tom Brady as the quarterback of the Patriots was probably in the snow against the Raiders. It was probably that game in particular. I think if you live in, I don't know, Arizona, that was probably your first time you really paid attention to this kid from the, you know, from the Patriots that was leading them in the playoffs. But I will tell you something, man. The Steelers were really good that year. They had Cordell Stewart at quarterback. And I got a lot of family members because we went up to New York to – like, we went up to New York just before the championship games. And I remember, like, my cousins and my uncles and were telling me, ah, the Steelers are going to the Super Bowl. No one thought that Steeler team would lose to New England. Not one. Nobody. I didn't think they'd lose to New England. I thought this is the team I feared the more was the Raiders. I was scared of that team. But I wasn't scared of the Patriots. How dare I be so confident? And then I was watching that AFC Championship game a week later, and I was like, I can't believe it. The Steelers aren't in this game. They're not. Why aren't they in this game? Why aren't they winning this game? Why aren't they comfortably ahead? And then when Drew Bledsoe came in and still it continued it along, and that defense was unbelievable. That defense was so good. And that was the reason why a lot of bettors went with New England in Super Bowl 36 against the Rams. A lot of people went. That is a defense to reckon with. That was, I think the Rams opened up as a 14-point favorite in that Super Bowl. Everyone went, no. We are taking the Patriots. That team is too good defensively. But, yep, 20 years ago on this date, the Tuck Rule game. Still a little confusing, but nevertheless, one of the more
historic moments. Still controversial.
Still controversial, too, yeah. I think if you're a Raider fan, I think you don't take that, like, you don't accept that. I think most Raider fans didn't accept it and still don't accept it. The Raider fans have always felt like they got screwed over by the league anyway, all those years, right? From the Immaculate Reception to all sorts of things that have happened to them.
Now to a whistle.
Now to a whistle. That's right. Yeah, now to a whistle. Add it to the Raider complaint in the postseason legacy. They've always felt they've gotten screwed over.
Somehow, some way, the officials are always against the Raiders. No respect for the Raiders.
Exactly. Hey, don't blame us that you didn't win Super Bowl 37 against Tampa Bay. You're the ones that got rid of John Gruden and sent him to Tampa
right.
And then didn't change any of the plays.
Do you think they go back and say, hey, that Super Bowl should be amended because John Gruden was sending bad emails?
Right, exactly. Then we start taking away John Gruden's legacy.
Yeah.
We start stripping it away like we do in college basketball and college football.
Yep.
Where they go, you didn't see that. You know? It's like what they did with the Fab Five
right.
in Michigan. They took down all the banners like, no, you didn't see anything with them. You didn't see anything.
Never existed.
Oh, by the way, speaking of which, I wanted to get this in. Mike Krzyzewski and Duke lost to Florida State last night. And they lost in overtime. And because Mike Krzyzewski's final year, I think that if you beat Duke at any moment during the season, during Mike Krzyzewski's final year, have a great time with it, right? Because how often are you going to get to do that now? He's making the stretch run towards the end of a storied career. And good for Florida State last night.
Why haven't people been giving him gifts yet?
When are we doing that? Why aren't we doing that?
If he plays a game in California, are they going to give him a surfboard? If he plays a game in Texas, they're going to give him boots? When is that going to start happening?
Yeah, can you do that? Like, can North Carolina give him something?
You know?
Could Wake Forest give him something? NC State?
If it's North Carolina, do they give him rolling papers and a pouch of tobacco?
I think that might be cool. I think that might be cool. If you got, like, a tobacco kit, right? Yeah. It's a little different though when you're Duke, like getting the farewell tour, right?
Yeah.
Like everybody, oh my God, everybody can't stand you. Everybody can't wait to beat you.
Good, get out.
Yeah, get out. Thanks for 40 years of dominance. I appreciate it. God, what a legacy he has, man, Mike Krzyzewski. But the great Gene Deckerhoff was on the call as I was hearing a couple of highlights. He He is one of the more excitable play-by-play guys you'll ever hear. And here's the thing about Gene Dekeroff. He is the play-by-play voice of Florida State Athletics, but he is also the play-by-play guy for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he will travel, and he will take overnight flights to get to wherever the Bucs are. So during the football season, let's say Florida State is in at Clemson, on the road at Clemson, and the Buccaneers that Sunday are playing in New Orleans. He will do the Florida State game at Clemson, and he will fly to New Orleans overnight if he has to, in any way, shape, or form, to get to the Buccaneers game so he can call the Buccaneers game the next day. He is a true, true workhorse. Legendary broadcaster Gene Dekeroff, and added one to his lore with the Florida State, an unranked Florida State basketball team, upsetting. But that happens in college basketball. It's just like every now and then you get a team like that will pull off an upset, and then all of a sudden you go, oh, all right, well, we shall see. But Mike Krzyzewski, I think you bring up a really good question about the tour, the farewell tour. Yeah, he's unlikely to get those things, but I do think in certain places, could you pull a rivalry back for a second, or do you think it's too much for like North Carolina to go, man?
Well, I mean, we
rooted against you, but my God, you were a great competitor, the Red Sox did with Jeter.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to bring that up, you know, or even what they did with Mariano Rivera.
Yeah,
you know, who constantly shut them down, even though they got the final say against Mariano in 2004. But yeah, I mean, I think you could pull it back just for a night and go, you know what, hey, thank you. Or you'd take the approach of like, yeah, we're celebrating you leaving.
Yeah.
And we don't have to deal with you anymore.
I remember the Celtics did that for Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Like they gave him Celtic fans gave him a standing ovation. I mean, they just, you know, I think Magic said something about he wanted to hear boos. He'd rather hear boos in that place, kind of joking around, you know, but really appreciated the fact that Celtics fans could pull themselves away for a second and go, you know what? That's some of the best times of my life watching you and that team. You know, maybe it hurt when you won, but the Celtics like a rivalry of the 80s was like a cherished thing. It was like I enjoyed being a part of it.
I mean, don't you look at it this way that it's a moment in sport that is larger than the game itself.
Yeah, and I think so. And if you're North Carolina, you can still hate Duke. And Mike Krzyzewski would not want you to not hate Duke,
yeah,
right? That's part of the deal.
He might even have the same Magic response. Like, why are you guys cheering for me?
Don't cheer me. Boo me. You've always booed me. I want you to boo me. That's how David Stern, when he came out for the final time and they cheered. And he goes, now stop it, guys.
Yeah.
Come on. Cut it out. Do what you do, right? Like, but at the same time, I think if you're a North Carolina fan, maybe you're one of those longtime season ticket holders. You've been going there since the 80s. You could pull yourself back for a second and go, you know what? Some of my best moments were when we beat you. Some of my best moments were when you had a team that was unstoppable, and yet we found a way to beat you. When Dean found a way to shut down Mark Allery, or when Roy Williams had a team of underachievers, and yet they found a way to beat you. Whatever it may be, the history of the rivalry. You can 40 years of that, you could pull yourself and go, you know what? Thanks, Mike. Thanks for bringing a really tough team here that broke my heart. But also thanks for bringing a really tough team here so that when we won, we really felt the importance of it. Like, I think that's cool. I think it would be a good thing to do. Sometimes you have to do that. But again, you can still hate the guy. You can still hate the team. But I think for a moment you can say, hey, thanks, Mike Krzyzewski, for 40 years of really representing what you had to represent really well, so that we had an opportunity to represent what we had really well. All right, we'll come back, wrap up this hour, get you set for hour number two, which will have the good, the bad, and the dumb, and then our good buddy Pat Donovan talking about the Buccaneers and their situation leading up to a very good Rams team coming up this weekend at Raymond James Stadium. It's all coming up on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us in this hour of Wake Up Call brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Home home options for your family? Rocket can. Michael on Twitter, I remember that 2002 Steelers-Patriots championship game. I watched the game at my friend's pizza place in Atlanta, and it's a Steeler bar. Oh, that's cool. I was the only Patriots fan. My buddy lost our bet and had to strip to his underwear and run around the block. I would have been that one. I was so confident the Steelers were going to win that game. I normally am and a lot of this is the Northeastern in me. I'm normally pessimistic. I'm always like, I don't know. But that team and that the way the Patriots hadn't, they weren't the Patriots yet. And you sort of went with the narrative of like, hey, who is this guy? Like, how long could this train possibly go, right? Like, who is this guy winning games in the playoffs and barely beating the Raiders in the snow of all places? When he gets up against those Steelers, man, he'll really see a team in the post. No problem. And Drew Bledsoe had to come in relief of that game and played so well. Drew Bledsoe is, for that season, that particular season, underrated for what he did, for how he backed up Tom Brady. The guy had lungs filled with blood in week two and then watched this kid from Michigan take his job, leading team to win after win after win, getting into the playoffs, and then ready to go when he was called on in that Steeler game. And then in the Super Bowl, the way he just stood by and supported Brady and that team winning a championship. Remember, Bledsoe had led the Patriots to a Super Bowl, Super Bowl 31, and they lost to the Green Bay Packers. So to watch another person get the podium, get the car, get the MVP, pick up the trophy, and he's the backup. Hey, that underrated person on that Patriots team did his job when he was asked and had to watch his starting job go get away from him to a legend. Yeah. Well, hour number two coming up next is Wake Up Call.